live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about things that are important in our lives and how to live a longer and healthier life. How stevia, a very powerful natural sweetener, controls blood sugar levels, from Catholic University in Belgium. We'll also look at avocado's nutrient arsenal against metabolic syndrome, University of Mashhad in Iran. We'll also examine the research benefits of NAC, that's N-acetylcysteine in bipolar depression, University of Cincinnati. And researchers connect common fats to a lazy lifestyle and diabetes, University of British Columbia. And exercise is associated with an improved heart attack survival, University of Copenhagen, and a lot more on health and healing. In the second part of our program today, I'm going to be interviewing Terry Strada. Terry is a mother, 9/11 widow, and a special interest advocate and national chair for the 9/11 Families and Survivors and United for Justice Among Terrorism. She serves as a liaison between the 9/11 Families and Survivors in the U.S. Congress and legislative directors who are responsible for our national security and terrorism legislation. Now, there is a bill called JASTA, J-A-S-T-A. It enables families and survivors of 9/11 to pursue justice against the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia for the role they played in knowingly financing Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and the 19 hijackers who commandeered the four commercial aircraft. And also, new information today, how Saudi Arabia has hired one of the largest PR firms, who in turn are hiring ex-vets to try to rescind and nullify JASTA so they can't sue. Now, this is important on two levels. First, because none of the mainstream media or Democracy Now! Supports what we believe are the injustices surrounding the official 9/11 investigation, meaning that even the former New Jersey governor who headed or co-headed the commission said that the truth, not all the truth came out. The chief legal counsel for the 9/11 commission had a lot of complaints about the commission, the people who were not willing to testify, and those who did were not willing to testify under oath, such as George Bush and Dick Cheney. All of the different eyewitnesses who claimed there were detonations, including responsible people, people who are first responders, the police and firefighters. None of that information was allowed into testimony. So at the very least, thousands of professionals, including architects and engineers and physicists, have claimed that the official version of what happened on 9/11 is simply inaccurate and incomplete. Now, any responsible journalist would start their investigation by saying, what is, in your opinion, based upon your research, what is wrong with the official report? They're not willing to do that. In fact, even any mention of 9/11, and you're considered a conspiracy nut. But in this case, we have new information today that you have not heard before that we will be presenting. And just so you understand, I'm one of the few radio programs in the world that actually has scholars in residence, that all of our information is vetted, researched, and verified prior to going on the air. So at least we have some confidence that the claims being made are legitimate. And all of our articles are vetted, both by scholars and by lawyers, so you could use them in a court of law, and they're fully footnoted. I use no blind or anonymous references ever. So you're going to want to pay attention to what is said on today's show. And keep in mind, a lot of programs would not allow my guest on to talk about what evidence she and other members of the 9/11 community have uncovered. And we'll explain why that's the case. Also today, I'm going to continue sharing insights and information about a major foreign issue blunder that President Trump, without full knowledge, without forensics, without complete evidence of what happened to the bombing that allowed the release of poisonous gases, mainly chlorine gas, not sarin gas, that had Trump taken the time to have had a proper investigation, to have examined carefully, methodically, and objectively the evidence, there'd be no reason for him to be bombing Assad. But boy, he fall right into the alignment of the neocons who need a war, who want regime change, and who've been successful up to this point. Everyone's gotten in line. George Bush got in line. Bill Clinton got in line. Hillary Clinton got in line. Ronald Reagan got in line. Just look what Ronald Reagan did. I've given you the documentation. I've given you the country, the year, the date, the number of people involved, which agencies were involved, how many people were killed. I've done that 20, 30 times. So the evidence, which is a matter of record, that we, the United States, has killed or caused the death of 20 million people in the world since the end of World War II, that's accurate. The fact that we've invaded countries is accurate. The fact that we've engaged in at least 61 regime changes, messing in their elections, funding it through the CIA and death squads and terror units to make sure that our people got in positions of power that served the interest of the multinational corporation, that's accurate. In fact, everything we say is accurate. Nothing the New York Times says on these issues can be held to the same standard of accuracy. They supported the war in Iraq. Judith Miller, one of their lead reporters, was the cause of millions of people suffering. I believe she should be held accountable with all the people involved at the New York Times in crimes against humanity because they were complicit. Just like we would say that anyone in Joseph Goebbels' Department of Propaganda during World War II would be complicit in the destruction of Jews, gypsies, blacks, and gays. Well, why don't we hold anyone ever accountable? Zero. Not a person. The only people that ever see the inside of a cell are whistleblowers who, through their integrity and honesty and decency, want to go forward and tell the American public the crimes against humanity committed in their departments, and for that, they are punished. And look at Julian Assange now. He is having to live as a prisoner in the Ecuadorian in Britain. So that's why we're going to be sharing these insights with you today. So I'm going to have today the former British ambassador to Syria on the BBC telling you the truth. And the last place you're ever going to find the truth is on the BBC. The BBC is just as culpable as CNN, and I didn't think there's a network that get lower, in my opinion, than CNN or MSNBC or Fox. I don't think we have to worry about anyone at Fox reporting the truth because they are aligned only with neocons. Even their so-called liberals like Juan Williams, still a neocon. Anyhow, we're going to tell you the truth and we're going to show you the truth. We're going to play audio clips. We're also going to have a group of scholars who spent their lifetimes honoring peace, who were part of a peace mission to Syria, and the mainstream media didn't touch any of this. We found the interview at the United Nations. We're going to play it. So you see, we have a full show for you today, and we always begin by looking at the latest on health and healing. Some good news for those of you who care to do your homework and say, how much longer could I live if I exercise regularly? Well, there's no absolute figure. It depends upon what age you begin exercising, the type of exercise you do, whether it's nonstop, whether it has interval and intensity, a part of it, like biking, running, power walking, swimming, and then going fast as you can for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and slowing it down, then fast as you can, slowing it down. All that adds up to anywhere from 5 to 10 years of healthy additional life. So we want people to begin to exercise. Now, what about their diet? We know that diet can contribute or diminish the quality of life, and we know it can contribute or diminish our lifespan. So from Catholic University in Belgium, they took a look at an herb. It's a very sweet herb. It's 500 times sweeter than sugar, yet it has no calories. It's called stevia, S-T-E-V-I-A. It's extremely sweet. Now, how does the sweetener keep your blood sugar under control? Well, researchers from the University of Leuven in Belgium have determined that stevia stimulates a protein that is essential for our perception of taste and is involved in the release of insulin after a meal. And these results create new possibilities for the treatment of diabetes. For those of us who've been using stevia or recommending, stevia is a very popular non-caloric substitute for sugar. The plant-based sweetener is also believed to have a positive effect on blood sugar levels. And so that's important too if you're diabetic or hypoglycemic or you suffer from prediabetes. So now, if you're diabetic, taking stevia can help you keep your blood sugar level down, yet give you the sweetness that you want in something. From the University of Mashhad in Iran, they took a look at avocados. And the nutritional composition of avocados is potent enough to positively affect the metabolic changes seen in type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. The review confirms that avocado is one of the single most important nutritional foods you can consume. The oils are good, the carotenoids, the minerals, the phenolic, the vitamins, and the fatty acids. And this was done from the University of Medical Science. Quote, the lipid lowering, that's your cholesterol lowering, anti-hypertensive, that's lowering your blood pressure, anti-diabetic, that's lowering your blood sugar, anti-obesity, that's helping you burn fat, anti-thrombotic, that's helping your heart, anti-atherosclerotic, that's helping your arteries and your heart, cardioprotective, helping your heart. Effects of avocado have all been demonstrated in several studies, end quote. So you're looking at one of nature's 10 most perfect foods for your heart, for your blood vessels, for the fat metabolism, for your cholesterol level, for your blood pressure. And that study simply confirmed it. Also, research shows in the University of Cincinnati that NAC, that's N-acetylcysteine, can help you with mild depression and also increases brain function and helps you if you've been diagnosed with bipolar. Now, I challenge bipolar as a legitimate condition. And I won't get into it now because we have so much to cover, but bipolar is according to the National Institutes of Health, is very common in children. Well, so is being up and down and energetic and unenergetic and moody. That's normal in children. That doesn't mean they have a brain chemical imbalance called bipolar. But in this case, those who were diagnosed with bipolar, when they used a supplement of N-acetyl, A-C-E-T-Y-L-cysteine, C-Y-S-T-E-I-N-E, that modulated a neurotransmitter in the brain, glutamate. And that's involved in the neurobiology of bipolar, so they claim. So in any case, if you believe in bipolar or not, evidently N-acetylcysteine helps you if you're depressed. And that's the good news. And finally, researchers connect fats, common fats, to lazy lifestyle and diabetes. This is in the University of British Columbia. And the researchers are suggesting that the types of cooking oils people consume can be sabotaging their efforts to stay healthy and avoid illnesses such as diabetes. The foundation researchers and scholars took a look at the American diet. They found that we're eating way too many of these polyunsaturated fatty acids. But we're not eating the good monounsaturated fatty acids like olive oil. And we're eating an awful lot of our fat from fried food, like French fries absorb the trans fats. and as do some muffins and donuts and fried fish. And gee whiz, if you ever watch some of these programs, there was a program that someone told me to watch, I wouldn't believe what people eat. And it was about Carnival Eats or something like that. I wouldn't recommend a single thing in, it's all deep fried and very unhealthy. So they're showing that those fats that you take in are unhealthy, and that affects your blood glucose level, affects your heart, affects diabetes. So what fat should we take in? Here's the simple answer. When you cook, try to cook at a low flame and use only three oils in cooking. Macadamia nut oil, mustard seed oil, and coconut oil, because those are have the highest capacity to resist damage from heat. At the end of cooking, when the flame is off, then you can add olive oil, avocado oil, sesame oil, almond oil at the end. Otherwise, they're very sensitive to being burned. Well, one more from the University of Copenhagen. Exercise is associated with improved heart attack survival. This was published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, and it shows that when you exercise on a daily basis, you improve your survival after a heart attack. That's important. Quote, we know that exercise protects people against having a heart attack, and the studies we just did show that myocardial infarctions are smaller and less likely to be fatal in this experiment when there was exercise. So exercise, very important for your survival. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. We're going to go to our guests and talk about new information on Saudi Arabia's complicity in 9/11 in about 20 minutes. Before that, however, we're going to go to our audio file. And here's an extraordinarily credible person. He was lived in Syria. He was the former British ambassador to Syria. And he is a scholar in the field. And they were trying to goad him. And they were saying, well, because everyone else is saying, and because our Minister of Defense says that Trump was right, doesn't mean that anyone was right. Listen to his response on the BBC.
So that the full statement from President Trump in the immediate aftermath of that missile launch, former British ambassador to Syria, Peter Ford, is with me now. Very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Can I just draw your attention first to the opening part of that statement from President Trump? He said, my fellow Americans, on Tuesday, Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad launched a horrible chemical weapons attack on innocent civilians. It's a statement of fact.
It's a statement, a misstatement. Of non-fact. We don't know. What's needed is an investigation. Because there are two possibilities for what happened. One is the American version that Assad dropped chemical weapons on this locality. The other version is that an ordinary bomb was dropped and it hit a munitions dump. The jihadis were storing chemical weapons. We don't know which of these two possibilities is the correct one. Remember the run-up to Iraq. The experts, the intelligence agencies, the politicians were convinced that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. They produced reams of evidence, photographs, diagrams. It was all wrong. It was all wrong. It's possible that they're wrong in this instance as well, that they are just looking for a pretext to attack Syria. And let's not deceive ourselves. What has happened makes more use of chemical weapons more likely, not less.
Well, the sentiment that you're talking about there chimes most amongst international reaction to what happened, the chemical attack, with what Russia is saying. You chime most with them. We heard from Michael Fallon, the Defense Secretary. He is convinced by the evidence sufficient that he backs this action. Why is it then that you are, if you like, a relatively lone voice.
I don't leave my brains at the door when I examine a situation analytically. I try to be objective. And based on previous experience, including Iraq, we can see that we cannot take at face value what the so-called intelligence experts tell us, not when they have an agenda. But come back to the main point, that it's not going to end here. And we are likely, Britain, to be dragged into it, because Trump has just given the jihadis 1,000 reasons to stage fake flag operations, seeing how successful and how easy it is with a gullible media to provoke the West into intemperate reactions. They will very likely stage an operation similar to what they did, and this was documented by the United Nations in August last year. They mounted a chlorine gas attack on civilians, and they tried to make it look like it was a regime operation. This, mark my words, you're hearing it here. And it will happen, and we'll get all the warmongers coming to tell us that that Assad is defying us, and we must go in more heavily into Syria. This will be fake flag.
If I can just ask you, your expertise, it's worth saying, a former British ambassador to Syria, with your knowledge of Bashar al-Assad and his regime, their country, what do you think his reaction to this will be?
Assad may be cruel, brutal, but he's not mad. It defies belief that he would bring this all on his head for no military advantage. The site that was hit had no military significance. It made absolutely no sense.
Well, in a way, we're going back to the previous argument. My question is more about what
he would have angered the Russians. It for no other reason. This is simply not plausible.
But how will his behavior change? Now he knows President Trump is prepared to launch cruise missile attacks.
But he probably didn't do it in the first place, so it can't change his behavior if he didn't do it in the first place. But we will all pay the consequences. The oil price will spike. Very likely there will be more use, not less use, of CW as a result of this. And, this is also important, the Russians and the Syrians will give less cooperation in the fight against ISIS.
Okay. Peter Ford, thank you very much for coming in for us this morning. Peter Ford is a former British ambassador to Syria.
Again, it's just coming up.
Last night on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I did a full hour with one of the most knowledgeable, intelligent analysts in the world for 27 years under multiple presidential regimes. Ray McGovern was the point person for the CIA as the Russian specialist, and he's been a Russian specialist since graduating from Fordham Russian Studies back in almost 55 years ago. So over half a century, this is his specialization. And he is a member of all these former intelligence agents. And he said last night, rather unequivocally during the hour, that the best scenario right now, the information on the ground from intelligence agents on the ground in the area, is that the United States was notified, based upon an agreement that's been going on for a while between Russia, Syria, and the United States and Defense Department, whenever they were going to bomb a place, so that they didn't have any mistakes, so Russia didn't fire on an American plane. He said, so the Pentagon knew, the National Security Agency and the CIA knew, and the probability is the President of the United States knew that this was going to be a weapons depot. It was decided it was a weapons depot, and they were just going to blow it up, as they've been doing. After all, if you want to stop the terrorists, you better get rid of their weapons stocks when you can find them. Of course, we're the one who supplies most of those weapons. That's a separate issue. So the Syrian plane bombed it. What they did not know was that Al-Qaeda in Syria was using that for its own chemical weapons manufacturing. And not knowing that they had gas in there, like chlorine gas and phosphorus and other components you use to make a bomb, that drifted downwind to a village. 10 people there died. It was not sarin gas. So everyone knew in advance what was going to happen. What no one knew was the consequence of them blowing up a place that had some chemicals in it. Now, here's what Ray said. He is in touch with all these intelligence people. After all, he was high up and one of the major players in the CIA in analysis of Russian affairs for decades. And so he said that there's just no way Assad would have done this. Siri wouldn't have done it. And once again, we are led to believe that always, you know, look what they're doing. When all the neocons tried to goad and force Obama to go after Assad the last time, there's supposedly a sarin gas. But Seymour Hersh proved, and other intelligence agents proved, it was not Assad and the Syrians. It was al-Nusra and al-Qaeda that were using chemical weapons against the Syrian people. So if you have a chance, please download from our archives. I'm going to give you a phone number. You can call in to the archives and download last night's show. It's really a primer on understanding Russia and the United States and Syria. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to play you about 10 minutes, that's all, of a press conference that no one attended at the United Nations. I only saw about two reporters there. And these are a whole group of very experienced, scholarly peace activists, including lawyers, constitutionalists, who went to Syria at the behest of the United Nations and the largest peace coalition in the United States. They interviewed opposition members. They interviewed all kinds of people to come back to tell the truth about what was going on in Syria, and most importantly, what do the people living in Syria have to say about regime change and the President Assad? None of this is getting into the mainstream media. None of it. To the contrary, every single conversation starts with, well, the civil war in Syria. They say there is no civil war. They say, well, Assad's, you know, butchering his own people. No, he's not. You've got to hear what the people on the ground talking with people in Syria had to say, who are not ideologues, who do not have a political agenda, just telling us the truth. Let's go to the tape, and this is part two.
My name is Madeline Hoffman. I'm the director of New Jersey Peace Action. I went as an individual representing myself, but I've been a peace activist for 16 years. And I went because I felt that I went to Syria because I felt that it was important to learn from the Syrian people themselves what was actually happening in Syria, because there has not been enough of or a focused enough response by the peace movement in the United States to what's been going on in Syria. And I can't add a whole lot to what Henry and Al have said, but I want to make this one particular point because I think it's very important and it gets to the core of everything that's going on. This is not a civil war in Syria. That's probably the first thing we heard, and we heard it over and over again. It is not President Assad against his own people. It is President Assad and the Syrian people all together in unity against outside forces, outside mercenary forces, terror organizations, the names change every day or every other day to try to protect their identity and maybe keep the connection between the country that funded it and that group kind of a little bit more nebulous. But there are groups, mercenary forces supported by Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, the United States, and underneath it, Israel, the state of Israel. And these outside mercenary forces are the ones that are terrorizing the Syrian people and are attempting to divide the Syrian people. I remember when the U.S. invaded Iraq, our organization was against it well before the invasion ever began. But once the invasion was over and the United States was setting up a government, we talked to many Iraqis who said, we're not Sunni and Shia, we're not Sunni, Shia, and Kurds, but the United States is trying to divide us that way. And we got exactly the same message when we were in Syria. We are Syrians, as Henry said before, whether you're Christian, Muslim, or other, you're Syrian. And that's one of the things that's enabled the Assad government to withstand 5+ years of this kind of outside attack. When Saddam Hussein, when it was time for the U.S. to unseat Saddam Hussein, after years of sanctions and two wars, he fell like that. When it was time, the United States decided time for Gaddafi to go, he fell like that. But when it was time, the United States decided it was time for Assad to go, he did not fall. And why? Because he has the support of 23 million Syrian people, and it was more before all these refugees were created and refugees were sent around the world. The whole idea of regime change, the policy of regime change, if you will, is illegal under international law. The United States has no right to do that. The United States has no right to decide for the Syrian people who their government leaders should be. And so during my time there in Syria, I felt that over and over again. Who are we? Why are we presuming to know what's best for the Syrian people? And the other part of this that I think people in the United States need to know is that the Assad government provides free health care, free universal health care to everyone. It's a mission, it's part of the government's mission. Free education for everyone from primary school all the way through even to university and medical school. And we met with one person, when we met with this one particular person from the nonviolent opposition, we asked him, well, tell us, what are some of your grievances with the Assad government? And he said, well, you just heard that it costs about $50 a year for people going to medical school. We think that's too high. And he was being somewhat facetious, of course. But these are the kinds of policies that our citizens here in the United States are calling for. Tuition-free college, universal health care. So the Assad regime, the Assad government, excuse me, is in the business of doing this and providing this to the people. And without a doubt, even the nonviolent opposition parties who had issue with issues of democracy or corruption prior to 2011, everyone has thrown themselves in behind the Assad government because that's the best hope, the best bet for the Syrian people. And so lastly, I think I want to echo what Henry said, that to a person, people asked that the sanctions be lifted, because those sanctions, while we were there, somebody came and said a certain pharmaceutical company, which name I forget at the moment, was refusing to send childhood immunizations from the United States to Syria, causing great harm to Syrian people. That's not how this country or any country should act within the world community. So the sanctions, as we've learned many times, do not hurt the governments they're intended to hurt, they hurt the people. And so they need to be lifted. We also heard that the border between Turkey and Syria needs to be closed so that this pipeline of trained groups, terror groups, is blocked and no more of those groups get into Syria. And finally, and this is where we come in as the United States, that the United States needs to stop supporting some of those outside terror groups. All the support for the outside terror groups needs to be withdrawn and allow the Syrians to fend for themselves. The Syrian Arab Army is fighting for its life and fighting for the life of Syria. And we need, as a country, to acknowledge our role, what we are doing to cause harm and destruction to the Syrian people. And we need to stop it. And we need to stop it now. And that's why one of the things I'll be saying over and over again since my return from Syria.
So. Play another person, and the next day another, just so you can see that people who went on their own time and own dime, but representing a peace movement, wanted to know, was the American media, the world media, telling you the truth about Syria? And the answer is unequivocally no. There's no civil war. There hasn't been. It's all about regime change. And we can prove from documentation now available through WikiLeaks that they had intended regime change going clear back before 9/11. So the more we learn, the better we can decide how to lend our support to stopping our intervention in other people's affairs. In a few moments, we're going to our guest. But before then, I didn't know that we had a product left. I had, before leaving on my current outing to finish up two important documentaries, I was led to believe we were proud of it. In fact, I even asked, could they send me one of my stored bottles so I could use it on the road, of survival stuff. Just so you know that a lot of the challenges we've had over the last 3 years of having product out of stock and delays in getting it to people, that's been remedied. We have a brand new manufacturer, a new fulfillment center. There's pick, pack, and shipping within 24 hours going out the door. We can monitor, as you can, through the entire process. You know where your order is at, and the shipping price has been reduced by, I think, over half. And we have a whole bunch of new products. I'm going one next week as soon as we get it in, two new products that I've created. So it's a whole new day, and I'm very pleased about this. But one of the products I created some years ago, when I believe and still believe that we may be facing some catastrophic natural events that we're unprepared for, hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, like in Louisiana, where over a 500,000 people lost their homes and not rebuilding because they weren't insured, fires. And then with someone like me, where you just travel a lot, you don't want to eat bad food, so you're not going to eat bad food, so you want everything your body needs. So I created a product at that time called Survival Stuff. Now, what Survival Stuff is, it's really about six different products all in one. It's a huge gallon container. And in it, you're getting everything that you would get, like high-quality plant-based protein, high amounts of fiber. But you're also getting pea protein-bound rice protein, alfalfa, and pumpkin seeds, and flax seeds, and barley greens, and carrots, and kale, and cauliflower, and cabbage, and parsley, and ginger, spinach, celery, broccoli, asparagus, collard greens, apples, bananas, cranberries, strawberries, chlorella, spirulina, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, kamut juice, oats, sprouted quinoa, sprouted kamut, sprouted spelt, sprouted amaranth, oat beta-glucan, chia seeds, alaria, which is a seaweed, dulse, which is a seaweed, laminaria, which is a seaweed, and scalphilium, which are the good probiotics, 8 billion non-dairy probiotics, plus you're getting stevia and pineapple and cherry natural flavor. So it's just huge. You're getting all that, and it lasts a long time. So when you need it, it's there. For some people, get it and just, you know, let it be until you need it. Other people, they want to use it on a daily basis. That's fine. But I thought I was out. I believe they found 222 bottles. So I said, put it back in stock and I'll offer it today. Because when it's gone forever. And you will never get a deal like this again. Because remember, you're not buying, in effect, one product. You're buying all these products in one product. So it would regularly be $359. You're only paying $139. You're saving $220. Let me repeat that. You're saving $220. So for those who want to get it and get a lot of it, store it, and then you got it. Call this number, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. You'll speak with either Diane or Giovanni or Stephanie. Call them now, 877-627-5065, because it probably will all be gone in the next 24 hours. At least you will have done the right thing, and you will have what you need. If there's ever a need that you need nutrition and good nutrition, you heard the ingredients, you just don't get better than this. There's no product I know of in the world that has all these different nutrients in it the highest quality I could get in one single product. So that's it. We're going to take a break, come back with my guest. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world who are listening now. From New Jersey, my guest, Terry Strada. I mentioned earlier in the program that she is a mother, a 9/11 widow, and a special interest advocate and national chair for the 9/11 Families and Survivors and United for Justice Against Terrorism. She serves as the liaison between the 9/11 Families and Survivors and the U.S. Congress and legislative directors who are responsible for national security and terrorism legislation. Terry co-created a grassroots campaign to advocate for President Obama to declassify the redacted 28 pages from the Joint Congressional Inquiry into intelligence activity before and after the terrorist attacks 9/11, and to urge Congress to enact the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, or JASTA. Now, the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act bill enables families and survivors of 9/11 to pursue justice against the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia for the role that they play in knowingly financing Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and the 19 hijackers who commandeered the four commercial aircraft. And Terry is on the phone with us now. Nice to have you with us today, Terry.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Terry, there's some important issues we need to touch upon, especially recent actions by the Saudi regime to repeal, to block, to amend the JASTA Act that enables survivors and families of 9/11 victims to file suits against the government. So first, briefly explain what the JASTA Act is, how it is connected with the 28 pages from the 9/11 Commission report, and what does it permit with respect to lawsuits against the Saudis, and what exactly do the 28 pages say that indict Saudi Arabia, and who in that regime, to the best of your knowledge, should be held accountable?
Okay, well, after 9/11, we were told that there were no state sponsors of Al-Qaeda, and that simply isn't true. As we started to investigate and learn more about the attacks, and not just that the 19 hijackers came from, 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia, but they also were trained by Al-Qaeda. And that Al-Qaeda, through these charities and dawahs that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia had set up to funnel money into the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda, we found that Saudi Arabia has been funding Al-Qaeda, which in turn were responsible for the attacks of 9/11. And so the families decided to file a lawsuit against these charities and the kingdom. And over the years, the courts kept making mistakes and misinterpreting the law, and they would allow the kingdom to be dismissed on sovereign immunity. And there is an exception to sovereign immunity regarding terrorist acts, and no country, no person, nobody is entitled to immunity if they're involved in a international terrorism attack on U.S. soil that kills or injures United States citizens. So we had to create legislation called JASTA that would close this loophole. There were a couple of issues, and one of them was that the entire tort had to happen within our borders. That's the way the law was being interpreted, and now with JASTA, only the injury has to happen within our borders. So if the planning, the plotting, and the money is being transferred and outside of our borders, and you can trace it back to a nation, then you can, now we can, hold that nation accountable. The law itself is enables any terrorism victim against any nation. It's just that the 9/11 families will benefit from it first because of this long-term lawsuit that we've had going with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The 28 pages that were withheld from us for over a decade, and that many family members became involved with that movement to get those declassified, show us that there is a direct link, that money was going through the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C., out to California to two of the hijackers that then carried out the attack. So the money that was being transferred or going through the Saudi embassy and out to these hijackers was for their living expenses. These men came here. They didn't speak English. They needed to get driver's licenses. I'm sure it went towards their fake passports, their flying lessons. You know, they took their flying lessons here in the United States. So the funding is what the 28 pages reveals, that Saudi Arabia definitely had a direct link to that. And the lawsuit that we're trying to move forward is to hold them accountable in a U.S. court, which now JASTA allows us to do.
What new information do you have from all the research you've done and the lawyers have done for the litigation that shows the royal family or people close to the royal family in Saudi Arabia funding the terrorists?
Well, this is the reason why we need to get into a courtroom, is to have the evidence that has been collected to be shown in a courtroom and to shed a light on the way that the kingdom used these charities and these dawahs for years before 9/11 to spread Wahhabism around the world and the most violent form of Islam, which is this radical Islamism that we've seen all around the world since 9/11, that you just trace the money back to where it was coming from. And I believe if we get into a courtroom and the evidence can see the light of day, everyone will begin to understand the extent of the kingdom's participation in funding 9/11. They had fought us vehemently to not have JASTA enacted. You know, they claim they're innocent, and they spent upwards of $6 million prior to JASTA being enacted lobbying against our law. So you have this foreign nation with this huge presence in Washington, D.C., with these high-powered lobbying firms fighting against us, the 9/11 families, to not have a law passed that will hold any nation accountable. Like I said, it is not directly directed at the kingdom. It just so happens that, like I said, we will benefit from it first because of the evidence we've collected. So we really just need to get it into a courtroom, and they are fighting us still to this day. So after the law was enacted in September, we thought, okay, we're in pretty good shape here. Now we can move forward. And unbeknownst to us, and we found out in January that there has been this huge campaign, multi-million dollar campaign, again, paid for by the Saudis, through a minimum of 17 lobbying and PR firms in Washington, D.C. They went on a spending spree of hiring at least 100 agents across our country to now go out and recruit our U.S. veterans to go to Washington, D.C. And on behalf of the kingdom, unknowingly, these vets are going to Washington, D.C., and asking for an amendment or a repeal to our law. And I don't know what's the worst part of this entire story, but what's really awful is that any of the amended language has nothing to do with the vets or our military. JASTA doesn't pose a threat to our U.S. military or our veterans or our contractors or our citizens. It can't. It only made an amendment to the Foreign Sovereignty Immunity Act. It only made an amendment to a nation, that we can hold a nation accountable. So there's just been this outrageous...
Terry, yes, Terry, a recent USA Today article quoted 9/11 family member Bill Doyle saying, quote, whistleblowers from all over the world have provided information that can be used to prove Saudi Arabia involvement in the 2001 attacks. Are you aware of these whistleblowers, and can you at least make some comments about their information?
I know Bill really well, so I do know that over the years, yeah, these whistleblowers did contact him, and whatever information they passed along to him was passed along to the law firm. To be able to say to you exactly right here and now what the evidence is, I really can't. There is an abundance of evidence. There is a lot of evidence that needs to see the light of day in a courtroom. You know, I don't think anybody involved in a lawsuit would publicly say, you know, what we have, it needs to be shown in a courtroom. It needs to come out where we can supply our evidence and they can come in and they can supply their case.
Terry, have you reached out to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and asked them, could they provide any information that they have about this connection?
No, I have not reached out. Okay, and then we'll
do that. We will. Okay, I will send you any information that Julian Assange provides us. Here's my final thought on this. I can understand why they would hire 5, 10, or 100 PR firms. First, the money is irrelevant to them. They're dealing in billions of dollars a day in income. And so spending $1 million a month, which is what I understand they're spending now, is not even chump change. But here's what's important. If you win in court, if you just win once, and that's upheld, then that means they can no longer do any business with the United States. They can no longer buy weapons because the law says also, another law, that we will not do any business with any organization or country, sovereign country, that's been found to engage in terrorism against the United States. So now they would be officially, as a country, on the State Department's terrorist list, which goes to all the different security agencies, and that would impact hundreds of billions of dollars in weapons sales. So you'd be facing the entirety of the military-industrial complex, over 400,000 contractors, large and small, from Raytheon to Hughes, all going after you, and every power player in Washington would be on their side. All the neocons, the Kagan family, they control all of the American media. They would be against you. So what you will have at some point, if it looks like they're actually going to be a court case, they cannot afford to have discovery. They cannot afford to have depositions. They will do all they can to dodge that. But if the worst case scenario happens, and this goes to court, and if they were found guilty, it would end them having any legitimacy, because then the President of the United States and Congress would have to acknowledge, who do we side with? The 3,000 people who died and their families in 9/11? Or the terrorist organization, which is actually a country called Saudi Arabia in the support of Wahhabism? So Washington is coming to its unique moment in time. So just be prepared for personal attacks. Be prepared for John McCain and other people and Lindsey Graham and all the super hawks to be on the side of Saudi Arabia. And you will see almost 99% of Washington, D.C. rallying around them because they follow the money. They won't give a damn about 9/11. And when was the last time you were on Democracy Now! To promote your cause?
Well, I mean, I have to disagree that they would all band together with the kingdom. I mean, when JASTA was passed, it was passed overwhelmingly in the United States Congress, 97-1 in the Senate and 348-77 in the House of Representatives. We have very strong support, not only to have JASTA enacted, but to keep it intact. And
there's a difference, Terry. There's a big difference.
I understand. JASTA was.
We have laws that were passed virtually. We had a law that was passed in the House of Representatives with not one dissenting or abstaining vote about solar flares and destroying our infrastructure, electrical infrastructure. But when it came down to actually engaging it, and the utility industries intervened, I'm suggesting that having the law is great. And you and the people who worked on this are to be commended. We support the families of 9/11. We support transparency. We support getting the truth out. But by the time that truth comes out, or it looks like it's coming out, all those firms that will be losing billions of dollars, the legislators who are going to be losing, if Saudi loses, losing their economic support, and the lobbying firms losing their contracts, then you will see what I'm referring to, and that is the reality of they'll do anything as long as they make them seem patriotic, but when it comes to losing money, that will be the pushback. And let's see what happens. Right now, I just hope that you get it into the court system. Terry Strada, and we wish them all the best, and hopefully we, the American people, not our legislators, will be able to know the truth when this gets into the court system, if it gets in, and discovery, because that's where you know the truth, because that's when the whistleblowers will start giving the information, and we will be in contact with Julian Assange to see what he has, and we will turn over all the information that comes to us, to Terry, and the law firms handling the case. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.